Blog Talk Radio.
We are not alone. And good evening, everyone. This is March 1st, and you are listening to Contact, and this is your host, Leslie Mitchell-Clark, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Wes Roberts. Good evening, Wes. How are you doing?
Hi, Leslie. I'm doing well. It's very bright outside. The weather's changing. We're good.
Yep. Canadians in shorts.
T-shirts.
The white legs that can be seen from the Mir space station. So
it's frightening.
Anyway, we are here this evening, and I must say this is a pre-taped program. And the reason for this is we are paying tribute to our dear friend, Mr. John Raffanello, who was a frequent guest on Contact. And a couple of weeks ago, we lost him from this physical dimension. He transitioned after a very brave but thankfully brief battle with cancer. And we're going to be playing a few excerpts from some of our favorite shows featuring John Raffanello, who was, of course, a clinician. He was a Disney Imagineer. He was an engineer by profession. And he was also known as a communicator with the entity that we know as Bashar. He was a telepathic communicator, not a full trance channeler in the sense that Daryl Anka channels Bashar, but definitely had a long and abiding friendship with Bashar, and we did spend many shows discussing Bashar and such. So that's what we're going to do. We also want to give a shout out to our sponsors. Let's shout out first to, of course, Euphoria Chronicles, the Euphoria organization, and their fearless leader, James Borg. And we'd also like to thank our fellow Euphoria Chronicle members, Abid, Tanya, Valerie, Kathy, and Regan. And we thank Euphoria for their constant, endless support. We'd also like to thank Conspiracy Culture, our friend Patrick White. We would like to thank Variety Stores Productions, a complete full-service production house. Our friend Greg Summer runs that. You can reach them through varietystoreproductions.com. And who else would we like to thank, Wes?
Well, we'll thank Enchanted Reverie for the jewelry that they do there. And we can thank the Ontario Hypnosis Conference, Canadian Hypnosis Conference. And we can thank the Alien Cosmic Expo folks.
Absolutely. And if you have not purchased your tickets, this is going to be the event of a lifetime, probably the biggest event of its kind in Canada. And it's happening June 25th, 26th, 27th in Brantford, Ontario, which is just a short drive from Toronto. And certainly we're going to have a whole incredible lineup of guests. And next week, next Sunday evening, our show will be live, and we'll be talking to Mr. Len Kasten, who is the author of The Secret Journey to Planet Serpo. So this is going to be a fantastic show. So next week we'll be live. You'll hear Len Kasten. You can call in and chat in. And do go online, aliencosmicexpo.com, and get your tickets now.
And it's going to be a great thing. We're planning for it. We'll actually be appearing in our own workshop, and Leslie will be hosting the event, introducing all these great guests. And you can see our beautiful photos if you go there, because our headshots are there. And so are all the other guests, of course. And there's 3 days of intense, fascinating activity. It's getting a lot of press, a lot of positive feedback. We keep trying to attract Robert Mason from Australia, but that would require funding, so hopefully we'll work that out down the road.
Indeed, and we should really shout out to our dear friends in Oz. We have a lot of devoted Contact Radio listeners in Australia, Robert Mason among them, his wonderful group, Years in Mind Dimension. He's his CE5 protocol. He's a wonderful guy, so thank you, Robert Mason, and all of our dear friends way down under, mate.
Yeah.
And it's getting chilly for them right now. We're getting warm and it's getting chilly.
So, Alexandra, we hope you're listening to this.
Indeed.
Okay, so what you're going to hear first is a clip of about 15 minutes, and I believe it's the very first show that John did with us, and it's from November 2011. So that's what you'll hear next, and then we'll come in after, and we'll talk about that clip.
Very well.
Now, but tell me a little bit about yourself. Are you in fact from L.A.?
No, I was actually born in Bristol, Connecticut, blessed with an incredible family. Yeah, my father was a bookie, Big Johnny Rapp, one of the first characters you ever want to meet. My mother was a saint, really, literally. She was. Her name was Beatrice, and she would sign her names Be Happy, B-E-A.
Oh, God bless her. How lovely is that? Now, did you end up going to school in the East Coast, or?
Well, I started there. I went to St. Anthony's Grammar School and High School, Roman Catholic High School, and then came out to California to do my first engineering degree in avionics, space electronics, and then went on there to study metaphysics and quantum physics, and studied with about every genius and crackpot that I could get a hold of, trying to figure out which was right.
Now, I know this isn't mentioned specifically in your bio, but I know that we have actually, I've been fortunate enough to actually meet you in person about a year ago, and we did discuss that you had also done some work in past life regressions.
Oh, yes, tremendous amount, actually. I processed many, many people through past lives, in between lives, parallel realities, did a lot of work myself, and that was quite fascinating because being brought up as a Roman Catholic, I didn't believe in past lives and didn't really even know why, because the subject never came up. But thanks to the work of a number of people in past life regressions, I learned how to do it and guided many people into them as part of my research.
So. Boy, it's endlessly fascinating, is it not? And also, you know, the thing that I think I find so rewarding about doing past life regressions is the incredible opportunity for healing and resolution, because people walk around with a lot of stuff, and that stuff can't always be easily explained by their experiences in this physical life. And it's amazing how, I won't say how easy it is, but with proper techniques, it's quite amazing how accessible that soul information is, you know, once you get someone to a certain point of relaxation and the membranes that separate our deep memory from our current memory dissolve, and it's really amazing work.
It is. It's absolutely wonderful. I've been blessed with seeing many miracles occur right before my eyes, all sorts of healings and amazing psychic experiences that people had that they never even knew that one was capable of. So it's a very exciting subject, but it even goes beyond that. It's quite amazing. I've been researching this sort of stuff since even before I went to college. Used to read books like Stranger Than Science that would explain these unexplained phenomena.
I was also raised Catholic, and there is, I would have to say, even though, and I should mention, by the way, reincarnation was part of the early Christian Church's doctrine until the Council of Nicaea, when it was thrown out. So reincarnation and also same-sex marriage were part of the early church.
Yeah, you know, even more than that. I mean, it's quite fascinating that some of the hidden doctrine had to do with the idea that the second coming of Christ was truly your discovery of yourself as a Christ consciousness, capable of anything. Right? So,
well, I tend to agree. In fact, the word Christ itself is, of course, it goes back to Sanskrit, and it really just means like enlightened one. So, in fact, there could be many Christs, or it could refer, as you say, to a Christ consciousness that that each of us has, you know, within ourselves. And finally, many of the things that you have known and written about finally are many of them able to be proven and illustrated by technology. Now that we have the real-time mapping of the brain, we know that when people are being regressed in past life regressions, that their memory centers are firing, not their creative centers. We know that the soul exists, if you will, outside the body, in a sense, on the quantum level. Hence the Akashic record. So there are many things that are able now to be photographed, sensed, measured, felt, which kind of leads me to believe that we are, in fact, moving towards a new era of enlightenment. What do you think about that, John?
I think you're absolutely correct. You know, it even goes beyond that. I remember when I was working on my doctorate paper, I had quite a time finding a physicist that would support it. It was called Including Consciousness in Our General Theory of Physics, because the original classic physics divorced consciousness from the experiments, and quantum physics was born when it was acknowledged that consciousness could potentially have an effect on the physical reality, and then it was demonstrated that it did. So metaphysics, which is considered to be not a legitimate science by many, is now coming closer to quantum physics, which is attempting to demonstrate that the consciousness actually does affect the physical reality, and in the ultimate literally creates the reality that we experience day to day, that our consciousness is energizing the reality into existence, much in the way our television tunes to a particular vibratory frequency and gives us a channel 2 or channel 4, that we now are developing the ability or activating an intrinsic ability to tune to one reality or to energize one, almost any what has been called parallel realities, but we're actually our programmed realities that we can experience. And probably for each individual, the only proof of any of this is actually experiencing it to be true.
Indeed. I mean, we are, I guess, multiphasic beings. I know myself, and, you know, I've been a transcendental meditator for, oh boy, probably 30 years. And there are times when, I won't say I leave my body, because it's not really like that. It's more like I experience multiple versions of myself simultaneously.
Lovely.
It's extremely blissful. I mean, I don't want anyone to think that we're talking about anything that's fear based here. Everything that we are talking about, these concepts are really in no conflict with religion. That, you know, although, you know, we could talk about ancient astronauts, and I do have some ideas, of course, about religion, but I did want to focus a lot. Now, John, I know that you have talked with me about extraterrestrial beings, and you had mentioned that since roughly 1985, you have been involved in channeling a particular, should I call him an ultra-terrestrial being?
Actually, he's a really close friend, and you can call him anything you want. Normally, an extraterrestrial. Actually, I did not begin channeling in 1985. I was actually introduced to Daryl Anka, who channeled an entity that called himself Bashar. And as the years went on, I found that I was developing the ability to channel him also, up to the point where I could have a conversation which is in many ways clearer than the one I'm having with you right now. And then I could have other entities also. Strangely enough, I had done that back in research that I had done back in 1965 and 66, and I had some amazing, if you want to call them, telepathic experiences. They're actually just tuning into another's reality, much in the way a television tunes into a particular station. But as far as the entity Bashar was concerned, that channeling developed after a couple few years of experiences with Daryl's channeling.
I see. And Bashar, is he? Have you gotten some information about? You know, because I believe there are many different groups of extraterrestrial and ultra-terrestrial beings that interact with us in various ways. Some have a not-so-nice agenda. Some have even evolved out of the point, really, of needing bodies, per se. So Bashar, has he given you some indication about where he originates, or his home base, as it were?
We could probably go on for many, many days. But Bashar basically represents himself as being from a planet called Esasani, which translates into our language living light. The planet itself is rotating around a star approximately 300 light years beyond the constellation that we call Orion.
Mm.
And their society, they live in ongoing ecstasy. They have no war, no suffering, no problems. And,
wow.
In fact, it was a fun story once. At one point, I was asking Bashar what he was getting out of these interactions, and he said, oh, you know, many things. He says, you know, as often we have referred to you as the masters of limitation. And he said, some of you...
Really?
A derogatory thing, and he says, it is not at all. He said, you are the most focused civilization that we have yet come in contact with, and he considers every experience, every reality to be a valid experience. But he said recently, you see, he represents himself as someone who communicates with many civilizations, ours being one of the civilizations. And he said that they'd recently gone into communication with a civilization they had not been in communication with before. And he said for the first time in 300 years in their history, they got into what we would call an argument.
Really?
They had an argument in 300 years, which in itself was quite incredible. Because he said this new civilization that they had contacted would not believe that it was possible for someone to not know that they created their own reality. How could a person have an upset, be sitting in a room upset with their wife or their boss or the IRS, and not know that they were creating it? They had to be obviously creating their upsets and their problems. But he said this civilization would not believe that it was possible for a person not to know that they created the entire reality they were experiencing. He said
And this was not us. This was these are somebody else.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that funny?
Convinced them that we have pulled it off, and they found this amazing that we could create upsets, we could create experiences, and at the same time not have a conscious awareness of what we were creating and that we were the creators. So it fascinated them.
So. Oh, my goodness. Now, in their society, do they have, or in their race, rather, do they have still corporeal form? Do they travel in space vehicles, or are they so far beyond that that they slipstream through quantum dimensions or something of that nature?
Well, when we first contacted them, yes, they were in a corporeal form. They do have physical bodies. They're smaller than ours. They're whitish-grayish skin. The large eyes that have often been portrayed in alien portraits.
Uh-huh.
Their planet is a complete garden planet. They do not put any industry of any kind on the planet. It is maintained in a beautiful, totally natural state. Their technologies are in motherships that are in orbit around their planet. So their planet's maintained in a beautiful environment. And one of the fascinating things is that they are in such beautiful rapport with each other. They have no upsets, no concept of creating any kind of negative judgment or any kind of negativity. And when an individual wishes to create something or wishes to do something, the entire resources of the planet are put at their disposal. Simply because choose to create it, and for no other reason. Wouldn't you like that, right?
Wow, isn't that, and a completely harmonious, you know, way of going about something. Now, do they reproduce, or
reproduce in much the same way we do.
Uh-huh.
Much the same way. Now, they are evolving out of, as I said, this was when we originally contacted them, or they contacted us, which was back in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
Bashar said that our mass consciousness, meaning the aggregate consciousnesses of all of the people and plants and anything that's conscious on the planet, from
mm-hmm.
their point of view, made a decision to evolve into a civilization similar to those, to theirs, I'm sorry. And that
mm-hmm.
set up vibratory frequency that enabled us to go into contact with them. And they claim that this is the common way of communicating with civilizations. They tune to what they call the signature vibration of a biological entity.
Yes.
And I've been training people to do this now for years. It's actually quite simple when you know the nature of it. But he said we were going to evolve into a civilization similar to those that set up the similar vibrations and enabled us to link and communicate with each other, those that were willing to do so. So.
Okay, that was an excerpt from our first visit with John Raffanello. We are paying tribute to him. He transitioned to the non-corporeal light realms a couple of weeks ago. And isn't it fascinating how he was so succinct and so able to really, really fill in the kind of person that Bashar is? You get the feeling of the warmth and the conviviality and the humor. And you can, of course, see all that if you look at any YouTube footage of Daryl Anka channeling Bashar. His personality is identifiable and has a vibratory signature. And I have no doubt that they're interfacing right now. No doubt at all.
I was just thinking the same thing. Was that one of John's earlier stops in the afterlife?
Yeah.
Trip to Bashar's planet. To greet him in person, so to speak, body to body, because the bodies would be equal there just as they are here.
Yes, and John did discuss in another episode we talked extensively about, is Bashar able to enter what we refer to as our spiritual realms? Because we do find, at least in the hypnosis work that I do, I find a lot of evidence of that, where there are presences of beings who aren't physically like us, who seem to be effortlessly moving in and out of what we would refer to as heaven or the spiritual dimensions.
This has actually always fascinated me, and we've talked about this on the show.
Yeah.
What we consider to be different states. You start with maybe the body, and you work your way to the brain, you work your way to emotions, and the mind and the psyche and the spirit. We think that's an ascension of states of being. But maybe it's all here always.
Mm-hmm.
And our problem is that we don't recognize it.
I think, and many, many great scholars, certainly Michael Newton, who really developed the technique of interlife regression, we refer to the heart as the path to the infinite. That it's really the heart chakra, it's really our desire and our love that is the thing that transports us. It's not really an intellectual exercise.
Yeah, actually our guest brought that up, Grant Cameron, was talking about right brain, left brain.
Oh, he was.
And the power of love. And wouldn't John have liked to have been in on that conversation?
Oh man, I almost felt that he was that day.
Yeah.
I almost felt that he was. He is so very missed. That's the hard part. You know, we can know in every cell of our being that he's transitioned and he's in his etheric body, his spirit body, and doing all the wonderful things that he wants to do. But we're still deprived of the kind of communication that we enjoyed when he was slogging about in the dense physical plane like ourselves.
100%. I've always said that death is for the living to sort out.
Yeah.
Because the apparently deceased, their bodies are gone, are having a great old time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. In fact, I did have a, you can take this for what you will, but it was the day after that John actually passed away. And I was in a dream state, but this dream was more like, I suppose, some of the experiences that you've had with lucid dreaming. It had a very different quality, Wes, than one's normal dreams that float about in REM state. So in the dream, John appeared to me as I had never seen him, probably about 35, something like that. I never knew him at that age. And he was wearing a powder blue, double knit, John Travolta Saturday Night Fever-ish suit. absolutely, which he probably wore back in the day. And he was ecstatic like a child on Christmas morning and holding his hand. Boy, I'm sorry, I shook it up. Holding his hand was a very petite blonde woman. Now, I have to ask my sister, who knew John's late wife, Caroline, I have to ask her what Caroline looked like, because I don't know and I never met her. But John was holding hands and in this absolutely ecstatic state of joy and so excited to greet me and be there with Caroline. Caroline, I assume, holding her hand.
I remember you telling me about this, a fantastic experience. And when they take on the surreal, a surreal environment, a surreal atmosphere, you know it's the real deal. It's beyond dreaming.
Yeah. Well, how better could he show me that he was happy and healthy and youthful? I mean, he showed me the visual of his reality, I believe. And when I speak to Karen and find out what Caroline looked like, then it'll probably validate it a bit more for me.
Well, we look forward to that observation. And we're going to cut for a little bit, because the next piece from John is from a show in January 2012. So you can see we started to want him on the show frequently. So that's what you're going to hear next.
You had any recent, I guess, interfaces, discussions with your friend Bashar?
Oh, yes. Just about every day, at least for a short period of time, we touch bases. Actually, practically any time that I think of him, I'm in communication to one degree or another.
Yes.
It goes on all the time. And I've been working on developing some experimental techniques on tuning to other realities, which was pretty much spearheaded by a couple of presentations that Bashar did through Daryl Anka, who he channels through, has channels.
Oh, I see. Your communication is so direct. It doesn't, you know, require channeling. It's only when Bashar wishes to maybe address a number of people or some people for whatever reason physically that he does get, you know, participate in the channeling process.
Correct.
Ah.
For those you know, a group that wants to get together, that is normally done through Daryl Anka. He also channels through a number of other individuals around the planet. And for myself, I have channeled for a number of individuals, but only on a one-to-one basis, not on a group basis.
Yes, yes, I see. And is Bashar, now the last time we talked about him, he seemed to me like an incredibly positive individual. Who, you know, who comes to you off, you know, with you know, hope and optimism and solutions, and is that kind of the mode continuing in your communications with him?
Oh, absolutely. As I was kind of pointing out before, they live in a state of continual ecstasy. They don't have any pain or suffering or problems of any kind. They're not in a dualistic culture. They don't have varying degrees of good and bad and right and wrong. They're basically living in an ongoing ecstasy, a state of utter joy, utter perfection that constantly gets better.
Wow. So they are also in a, I mean, nothing is static in the universe. They are also in a evolution of sorts. Is that, would you say,
yes,
that's okay?
Yes, they're transcending out of a physical reality, because their civilization has been physical, like ours, and they are transcending to a completely non-physical dimension or density. Actually, he refers to it as a density. Mm-hmm. And the primary idea of density has to do with how malleable a reality is, how easy it is for you to mentally, spiritually affect the reality that you're in. Obviously, in third density, where you've got a very dense reality in which people agree that they don't have the power to manipulate the reality, or they don't have the power to manipulate it to any great degree, they're stuck in that reality, whereas Bashar's civilization, as their reality is much more malleable, and they're moving to a fifth density reality where it is instantaneously malleable. You can imagine ideal home, and the ideal home materializes instantly.
Yes, it's a complete plastic. Well, it's as you say, it's just so so immediate. I mean, it's thought. It's thought manipulating, I guess, photons or light matter, or do we even really know?
Well, you know, that's a very fascinating question. God, we could spend the whole program on that. But the basic concept, probably the easiest analogy is to use your imagination. In your imagination, if you were to mock up or mentally create an elephant flying through the air and yourself sitting on the elephant, you would have an instantaneous manifestation of that in your imagination.
Yes.
But you wouldn't have the degree of solidity and clarity that you have if you were actually riding on a physical elephant. Whereas in fifth density, the degree of clarity and the degree of solidity is comparable to what we experience in this density as a physical reality.
Right. Oh, indeed. And you know, it sounds, John, like with, you know, some of the people that I work with, when they are having their experiences, which I really don't like to even use the word abduction experiences for most of the things that happen to the people that I work with. But I think for short periods of time, these individuals are in fact existing in some type of fourth or perhaps fifth dimensional reality. And I also think, as we discussed a little bit last time, that they're having some type of a psychophysical event, that it's not necessarily physical in the sense of moving this, you know, dense carcass around, but their etheric body or some aspect, some interdimensional aspect of them is in fact traveling and having experiences and interacting for a short period of time in this, perhaps interdimensionally in this way. I what do you think?
Well, I believe that all of that is going on with some individuals. You know, according to Bashar's and according to a lot of quantum and metaphysical principles, we basically choose the path, choose the reality that we're experiencing, although our conscious mind doesn't always inform us that it was a choice. We have to have an expanded consciousness to realize that it was a choice. But in answer to your specific question, yes, these experiences occur etherically, if you want to call it that, in your spiritual consciousness, in your mental. And although those can be extremely real, as you sometimes have dreams that are extremely real, and then on also planes, they actually do occur physically, where the physical body is picked up and transferred, and the carrier frequency, what Bashar refers to as the signature vibration, is accelerated, and thereby you tune to a different reality, just like when you change the carrier frequency on your television, you tune to a different channel. So,
yes. So
all
it's
all of beings have chosen to experience so many things that virtually there are some beings or some people representing just about every choice we can imagine.
Yeah. Yes, I think that I have no doubt of that. You know, I was there is some speculation among, you know, particularly, you know, ancient astronaut theorists when they're discussing, you know, our particular the human DNA and the amendments and the various things that occurred to it, possibly by the Anunnaki, possibly by other civilizations. But, the fact remains that it seems that through the tweaking of our DNA, it seems that we have almost been intentionally limited to a certain frequency. And that, in fact, is one of the things that has, you know, prevented us from transcending, or all of us from transcending, that we have some kind of a compressor.
I've spent literally thousands of hours with myself and with other people addressing the mechanics that keep them in a limited state, keep them, as Bashar would call, continuing the game of limitation mastery.
Yes.
You know, and yes, there are others, you know, you can say, yes, the Anunnaki manipulated this, but the concept is that the at a higher level of consciousness, there was a choice to experience different types of limitation.
Okay.
And as a result of that, our consciousness created various scenarios, much in a way a science fiction writer would write all sorts of different ways in which this could happen. And then
yeah.
the universe literally orchestrates those happenings into existence. So you could say, yes, the Anunnaki manipulated the genetic structure, yes. But that was one way in which we orchestrated the choice to experience limitation into existence.
Indeed, and I think that accepting the responsibility for choice, you know, just to slightly diverge from what we're talking about, I think that's one of the most freeing things that can actually happen, because so many people are walking around with a victim consciousness. And, you know, when I do past life regressions or whatever, you know, very often they are shown what they need to see, which is the fact that they recognize people in other pivotal roles, and suddenly things become clear to them, and it dawns on them that, yes, I have arranged this situation for for the mutual benefit, the learning experience that must take place, and therefore it doesn't make a lot of sense to rail in anger against a mother that I selected for a specific reason.
Exactly, exactly right. And these people and ourselves are obviously choosing to transcend out of the limitation, and as a result of that, we begin to see our own level of causality more and more in detail. Whereas if you're going to stay limited, being a victim is necessary. You can't stay limited without creating a victim identity. It just right.
That's so
you
true.
Create a causality viewpoint and stay limited. That's
yes.
contradictory.
Right. It's so.
Okay, that was another excerpt from a wonderful show with our dear friend John Raffanello, who we are paying tribute to today. And for those that are just tuning in, the show is pre-taped. I do apologize that we can't at this point take calls and such, but we will do so next week, next Sunday evening, when we welcome Len Kasten, author of The Secret Journey to Planet Serpo. Well, what do you think about that last segment of John's? His insights were so heady. He said, you cannot be a master of limitation without being a victim.
Yeah, I thought it's actually quite extraordinary, the gems of wisdom that are in a few words of what he says sometimes. And, I'm still trying to process it. We were there the first time around. And listening to it again, I'm still trying to process it. And as I was just saying to you offline, it hurts my head.
Yeah, it does. And we're going back, with the first clip that we played, 4 or 5 years, at the very beginning of the first year of contact. So, but it is even more profound now, I think, hearing it in retrospect. And John Raffanello is no longer a master of limitation. He's a master of exaltation.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So happy for him where he is now and the dream
mm-hmm.
that you described, which is no dream.
Yeah.
And fascinated with what he was saying about density, so maybe we'll talk a little bit about that in the next minute or two.
Indeed. So we were talking about how we're slogging about in, the third density, which is, we'll use that language, the
mm-hmm.
physical level in which we exist, that it's extremely hard to manipulate matter, which makes an awful lot of sense, because the denser and harder matter is, the less pliable it is. So part of the process of awakening and enlightening and evolution is being able to manipulate light matter with thought.
Yeah, and we're not ready for it on this plane in this density. It would be a disaster because we're not mature enough.
Yeah, indeed.
Not evolved enough yet.
Not all of us.
No.
But I think that is changing. But I suppose we could probably postulate that in order to be at the level where you are creating reality and creating matter, whether it's light matter or whatever it is, maybe it doesn't work unless your vibration is very high, your intent is very pure, and you're on the love level, or for lack of a better term.
So this is a place where you can't take your hit list with you.
No.
Well, it's funny. I'm just thinking, and we don't want to go too far with our comments here because we want to listen to John, but I think there's probably several gradations of the third density.
Oh, indeed.
Not just one.
Indeed, indeed. And we're seeing it on our Earth right now. And certainly it has nothing to do, really, with so-called sophisticated cultures, because there are indigenous cultures that are essentially operating with Stone Age technology that are probably very evolved and ready to transition spiritually because they're already existing in that way. They're already living in a sense where they acknowledge their multidimensionality.
I couldn't agree with that more. It's a fascinating area. Next time you and I do a show, we should explore that.
Indeed.
Give new meaning to the word dense. Right?
Yes, 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 indeed.
So the next clip coming up, which is the last one we'll play tonight, we'll comment on that briefly when it's done, is from an appearance John made on the show in August of 2013.
If you have not done so, either go on YouTube or Bashar.org, and there are a lot of wonderful videos available of Daryl Anka channeling Bashar, and and Daryl Anka will be invariably dressed in a Hawaiian shirt. I wonder how Bashar feels about those Hawaiian shirts. That's my question.
He goes, ooh, ah, aloha.
I mean, I see Bashar in my mind as, in general, a far more conservative dresser than Daryl Anka.
In a sense, but he loves every creation.
Yeah.
That's what's so beautiful. You know, at one point he started calling me Strawberry, right?
Yes.
Because he asked me a question. I thought he was going to ask me this deep philosophical question. He goes, what's your favorite fruit?
Gosh.
I said, strawberries. And he started calling me Strawberry from that time on. And, you know, I'd say, Bashar. And he goes, Strawberry. You know, and one of the great blessings was at one point he told me they've planted some strawberries on Esasani in my honor.
Oh, finally.
I was so touched.
Oh, isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
Oh my! I look forward to the day. I'm hoping that I will be in physical form on this planet, but I look forward to the day when I can actually meet Bashar in his physical self, meet his physical self.
Yes. He said, when you have genuinely considered yourself equal in every respect to him, you will meet physically.
Wow. That's a hard one, John.
If you say so.
Well, yeah. That's right. Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
You are a totally infinite, unlimited being, and you can make it hard at the speed of thought. Congratulations.
I did a beautiful job about that, didn't I?
Absolutely marvelous.
I limited myself really well.
Yes. Yes. In the Academy Award difficulties category, you're up for nomination.
Oh my goodness, that is so funny.
As are we all. But I love that response. You know, a person says, you know, well, that isn't going to be easy. And virtually every time he goes, if you say so.
Yeah.
It's going to be as we create it to be. It can't be any other way.
Wow. Well, I have been focusing on and meditating on these little images that that Bashar and his fellow Esasani people gave to us through a channeling as a gift. He said, "This is a gift from my people to your people," and they're unusual little figures. They're sort of geometric, but in fact seem almost biological as well. And each little image has a, it just has a, I don't know if it's a meaning, it has a name that is like a meaning. And Bashar said, now, you know, meditate on these images, and he gave very specific instructions about how often and how to do it. And he said, and play with them. And apparently they are some type of a exercise or perhaps a tool for enlightenment. He wouldn't even really say what they were. You know, in other words, even that part is sort of left up to us. It's just we're giving these to you as a gift, as we have done to many other civilizations who were waking up. And have fun with these images, and in due time, there will be more. And you will start to notice, he didn't tell us what we would start to notice. But in fact, I have been, you know, following Bashar's instructions, and sometimes these little, you're probably going to think I'm out of my mind, but sometimes these little drawings, if you will, seem to move and be almost organic.
Wow, how beautiful. Thank you so much for being out of your mind.
Well, draw these shapes yourself, yeah, I assume,
Bashar,
because then we... Go ahead, John.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sorry I cut you off.
I was just saying part of the process of receiving these images was you had to draw them yourself, and I know that we excrete certain chemicals when we physically draw something that are different from when we type something or notate it any other kind of way. So that was an important part. You had to actually draw these little interesting shapes. I think there are 20 of them.
Lovely. And as you were saying that, I got a beautiful, loving communication from Bashar to you.
Ah.
Would you like to hear it?
I would love to hear it.
He said, thank you for the gift of being out of your mind.
Oh, my goodness. Well, maybe in the quantum sense, I am actually outside of my mind.
Yes. What is our mind but a program?
That's all it is. It's just some hardware, right? I mean, that's what it is.
Well, it's actually the software that moves through the hardware. The brain is the hardware. The nervous system is the hardware. The software is the information that travels through the brain, through the synapses, through the spinal cord, along the nerves, and in the electromagnetic fields around the body. The mind is really the information that is, like in a computer, it's the information, it's the software that is being held in the memory banks, that's being held in the motherboard. And very much in a similar way to us physically, the information is the software that's being held in our nervous system, in our spinal cord, in our brain, in the synapses, and in the electromagnetic fields of the earth. So the brain, that information tends to be structured, fixed.
Uh-huh.
You are human. You can only do this. You cannot do that. You live on earth, you know. It is a set of programs which are, there's nothing wrong with them. It's a way of experiencing life. But when we come out of the mind, when we come out of the structured, we can then imagine life being any way that we choose to be and reprogram the mind.
Mm-hmm. Why not? It's you're given the raw, you know, you're given the raw equipment. It's like the difference between having an Atari and a Mac or this or that. Why not?
Yes. But you got to be out of it to deal with it. You can't be inside of it. And that's why Bashar was saying, thank you very much for the gift of being out of your mind.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm out there, man. I've come out. Not in the way you might think.
I love it.
That'll be news to my husband of 25 years.
Yeah.
It's all right, sweetheart. Yeah. I haven't come out. I've just come out of my mind.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be fine. Have you had some birthday communication with your dear wife? I was thinking of her this morning.
Right now, at the moment you mentioned it, she just came in with a beautiful birthday greeting. And yes, I've had a number of others. We actually get together and ice skate.
Oh.
Better than Torval and Dean, you know, who are the greatest ice skating couple in history. I've been recently, over the last few months, ice skating with Carolyn. She never was very physically coordinated in this life, right?
Right.
Put her on a pair of skis, and she got all freaked out. She said, "They're moving. They're sliding. They're supposed to slide." You know, right?
but now without the encumbrances of whatever, you can be together in this other reality or this truer reality.
It's marvelous. We skate to beautiful music. All of our loved ones are there. My mom, my father, you know, all the beautiful friends, beautiful ETs. They come and skate with us. Even Pop came out and skated with Mom, and we're all skating together. And it's just, it's such a marvelous feeling. The freedom of it, you know, and the joy and the gliding of it. And then Torval and Dean come and dance with us. You know, it's just, it's magic.
Wow. All right.
There's
a song title. It's magic.
Yeah.
John,
it's magic.
I had a little dream. Are you about you last night? Are you thinking about going to Europe? Are you thinking about going to Switzerland?
Yes.
Well, there you go. You're going.
Yes. Yes.
I dreamed about you last night driving along between Lake Geneva and one of those other beautiful towns in Switzerland.
Yes, doing a relationship mastery workshop and sharing the magic of Switzerland. It's just, it's such a beautiful feeling. And we're going to ice skate there and ski there and share relationship. I mean, I'm so thrilled about this relationship thing. You know, I've got
this is going to do so much for people, John, because I can tell by what the overview and having read the materials that you have found ways to explain concepts or convey concepts in incredibly accessible ways that are going to make it very widespread. You're going to give a lot of people, help a lot of people to live their joy.
Yes. I got some wonderful chapters. One is called No More Boredom. No More Boredom. End of Boredom.
Indeed. No
right.
such thing with you, John Raffanello. And that
right.
brings us down to the end of our show. I cannot believe it. It's been another hour of delight. And I just want to thank you on your birthday, especially for joining us here on Contact. And another couple months, we'd love you to come back and let us know about all your wonderful projects.
Oh, thank you so much, Lizzie. You are such a doll and such a beautiful contribution to people in the world. Thank you for who you've created yourself to be. It's just marvelous. And please, I'm going to be sending out my chapters. I'm just looking for some people to proofread them. So if anywhere, I mean, I'll send you a couple. If you find some typos in them, send them back to
me. I'll proof them. That's my specialty.
Great. Well, I'm going to send out the chapters one by one. And
okay.
I think you will, you know, they're fun.
Thank you, John. I'll look forward to that.
You.
All right, you take care. And one last happy birthday, John, and every blessing to you. And we will talk soon.
Okay, and a very merry unbirthday to you.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night, John Raffanello.
Good night.
All right, thank you very much. And that was John Raffanello.
Okay, friends. Well, that was just... an excerpt from one of our last shows with John Raffanello on his birthday, amazingly enough, which I didn't even realize, neither of us realized. So we want to just once again send out our love to all of John Raffanello's dear friends, particularly to his friends at the Center for Spiritual Living, Reverend James, my dear sister Karen Mitchell, and all of his very, very close friends. That was a real home for him. He contributed in all kinds of ways and was just a marvelous part of whatever community he joined. And I'm just very, very thankful that he was able to extricate himself from Scientology. We didn't really talk about that much, but he had a very tough time with that. He was very involved from the very beginning with L. Ron Hubbard, and of course, some of it was probably wonderful, the ideas about past lives and releasing trauma, but I think we're all pretty much aware of the type of organization that he has become, and when he did try to extricate himself, there were many repercussions. You know, he was an enemy then. He lost many of his friends. He was shunned, harassed. But being the strong and wonderful person that he is, he moved on to other ways of expressing his knowledge and his spirituality and his joy and his humor. And also, you know, John, many of you may not know this, but he would love to present various musical theater productions of his own design. And some of these were presented at the Center for Spiritual Living, and some of them were presented elsewhere. But he was very, very involved in theater presentations and had been working for many years on designing a theme park in collaboration with Disney, which he called Wonder World, which was going to involve, you know, extraterrestrial elements and such. And John had been one of the designers of Epcot. He worked for Disney for years. He was one of their Imagineers. So he was always involved in creative projects and creative ways to transmit his marvelous information.
Yeah, it's interesting. His site's still up for those of you that are interested in it, Wonder World. And, you know, I never met John in person, but the few times I met him on the show were extraordinary. And he'd say a couple of kind words, and after the show I was all choked up about it because he said something nice. And he said something wonderful without knowing me, at least I thought without knowing me. And so, you know, I really miss him. I always look forward to his vibe on the show.
Yeah.
And I'm, of course, still feeling his vibe.
Yes. And we can practice. We can key into his energy signature. As he said to both of us, it's a lot simpler than you think it is to communicate with Bashar or anyone. You simply think about the way that you feel when you're with that person. And that could be on the phone. It doesn't have to be a face-to-face relationship, but you, again, the pathway to the infinite, the feelings will take you. You will be able to identify a person's signature, energy signature, and then forge a communication. And it's, from John's perspective, he did it so long, for him it was completely effortless.
And that's how you know, if you walk into a room and there's been 20 people in there, that's how you know which ones were in there, if they're your close friends, because their signature remains.
Yeah, I think that's very true. So we're going to wrap it up for this evening, folks. Again, we're celebrating the life of a remarkable person, Mr. John Raffanello, who is carrying on with all of his wonderful activities, just not in the dense physical layer that we're slogging about in now. We love you, John. We miss our daily communication. We're going to practice your techniques. And do tune in next week, folks, where we will welcome Len Kasten, the author of The Secret Journey to Planet Serpo, and we will see you next week. And as always, do remember, we are not alone.
Good night. And good night, John.